a convention of Methodist ministers, and how agreeable it would be to note, in the midst of preciseness and purity, one of these parsons standing on his head. Or see the monthly notices of the Royal Astronomical Society, 1922, upon page 400 there is a diagram. Mistakes that I make and errors of yours. Contrasting with the much advertised divinity of the astronomers. Page 400 in the midst of a learned treatise upon adiabatic expansions and convective equilibrium is printed a diagram. It is upside down. I attended this convention of pedantries, of course inspired by a religious faith that is mine, that I'd not have to look far for a crook in its bombast, or somewhere a funny little touch of waywardness in its irreproachability, but especially I attended to pick out something of which, in this year 1922, the astronomers were boasting, to contrast with something they were doing. I picked out a long laudation upon an astronomer who had received a gold medal for predicting the motions of a star cluster for a term of 100 billion years, to contrast with. September 20, 1922, an eclipse of the Sun. See Mitchell's Eclipses of the Sun, p. 67, and the predictions by the astronomers. They made one error of 16 seconds, and another error of 20 seconds. There are persons who do not believe in ordinary fortune tellers. Yet, without a quiver in their credulities, they read of an astronomical gypsy who tells the fortunes of a star for 100 billion years, though, according to conventionality, that star is 60x60x24x365x100,000 times farther away than is the moon, motions of which cannot be exactly foretold, unless the observations are going to be, say at Bahia de Paranagua, or somewhere in Jungaria. The eclipse of September 20, 1922, was checked up by police constables, in Australia. But the eclipse of October 21, 1930, was observed at Nyuafu. This time the dispatches sent by the astronomers told of a complete success. The eclipse began exactly as predicted. There are records of seeming new stars that have blazed up, like spasmodic eruptions, then dying out. For Dr. Anderson's report upon one of these appearances, May 8, 1923, see Popular Astronomy, 31-422. Upon the 7th, Etna was active, earthquake in Anatolia, extraordinary rise and fall of the Mediterranean, at Gibraltar. The observatories missed Dr. Anderson's observation, but at one of them a small, new star was photographed, night of May 5. I neglected to note whether, on a photographic plate, this was immediately detected. See Pop. Astro, 31-420. Upon February 13, 1923, an increase of the star Beta Cetae was reported. There was interest in the newspapers. Maps of the sky were published. If newspapers start first paging astronomical occurrences, putting down X marks for stars, as well as for positions of bodies of the murdered, there will be more interest. This is dangerous to the astronomers, but so long as their technicalities hold out, they have good protection. Even so, there might be inquiries into what the observatories are doing, when, time after time, only amateurs are observing. The observatories had of course missed this rise of Beta Cetae, but, when told by an amateur where to look, professionals at Yerkes and Juvisy confirmed the report. For the fullest account, see the Bull. SOC. Astro. De France, of this period. Upon February 22, a yellow dust, perhaps a discharge from an increased volcanic activity in Cetus, fell from the sky, in Westphalia, London Evening Standard, February 27. The amateur, this time, was a schoolboy, aged 16. Night of May 27, 1925, the Rip Van Winkles of the South African Observatory were disturbed by an amateur. He told them that there was a new star in the southern constellation Pictor. When they were aroused, the Rips looked up and saw the new star, and then stayed awake long enough to learn that somnambulically they had, for months, been photographing it. For months it had been gleaming over the observatories of four continents. There are slits in the domes of observatories. the fixed grin of a clown, the slit in the dome of an observatory. September 21, 1930, that the astronomers had ascertained the heat received from a 13th magnitude star to be 631 times that of the heat from the faintest star visible to the unaided eye, that this faintest visible star radiates upon the whole United States no more heat than the sun radiates upon 1 square yard of said U.S. A grin in the dark or the sardonic slit in any observatory, night times. Most likely the inmates haven't a notion what is symbolized. But we contrast an alleged perception of 631 times the inconceivable with this item, in Popular Astronomy, 1925, p. 540. That 44 nights before the amateur's discovery, Nova Pictoris had shone as a star of third magnitude, and had been perceived by no astronomer. The building that laughs as a modern Victor Hugo would call an observatory with a slit in it. Fixed grin of the clown and, according to theatrical conventions, his head is full of seriousness. September 24, 1930. This is what came from a building that laughed, though its dome was full of astronomers. That, according to spectroscopic determinations, at M.T. Wilson, a distant nebula is moving away from this Earth, at a rate of 6,800 miles a second, that, upon the day of the calculations, the distance of this nebula was 75,000,000×60×60×24×365×186,000 miles. To appreciate the clownishness of this, see our data for accepting that the spectroscope tells about what is told by tea leaves in a teacup, which is considerable, if one wants to be told considerable. To realize the pathos of this, think of the grinning old clown, whose gags have played out, who is driven to most extravagant antics to hold a little attention. Our general expression is that the inmates of this Earth's observatories are not astronomers, but are mathematicians. Since medieval times there has never been a shake-up in this system of ancient lore, comparable with Lyellism in geology, or Darwinism in biology, or the reconstructions of thought brought about by radioactivity, in physics and chemistry. Einsteinism was a slight shock, but it is concerned with differences of minute quantities. Mathematicians are incurable. They are inert to the new, because the new is a surprise, and mathematics concerns itself with the expected. It does occur to me that there might be good results, if the next millionaire who contemplates donating a big telescope, should, instead, send around to the observatories big quantities of black coffee. But such is the concordance between the twinkles of the stars and the nods of drowsy heads that I'd not much like to disturb such harmony. Nova Pictoris, like many other so-called new stars, was an increase of an old star. For 25 years it had from time to time been photographed as a speck of the 12th magnitude. There is nothing on any photographic plate to indicate that another star was going to collide with it. It went up, just as dimly shining, or only slightly active, volcanoes of this Earth sometimes become violent. No star has ever been seen to cross another star, but just such changes as have been seen in volcanoes of this Earth have been seen in stars. Mostly, in their books, astronomers, telling of what they call proper motion, do all that they can to give an impression of the stars as moving with tremendous velocities, but here is Newcomb, Astronomy for Everybody, p. 327, quoted upon the subject, if Ptolemy should come to life, after his sleep of nearly 1800 years, and be asked to compare the heavens as they are now with those of his time, he would not be able to see the slightest difference in the configuration of a single constellation. And, if Ptolemy should come back, and be asked to compare the Mediterranean lands as they are now with those of his time, he would not be able to see the slightest difference in the configuration of any land, even though erosions of various kinds have been constant. What Orion was, Orion is, in the sense that what the configuration of Italy was, it now is in the sense that in all recorded time Italy has been booting Sicily, but has never scored a goal. There is no consistency, and there is no inconsistency in our hyphenated state of phenomenal being, there is consistency in consistency. Everything that is inconsistent with something is consistent with something else. In the oneness of allness, I am, in some degree or aspect, guilty of, or infected with, or suffering from, everything that I attack. Now, I, too, am aristocratic. Let anybody else who is as patrician as I now am read this book, and contrast the principles of orthodox astronomy with the expressions in this book, and ask himself, which is the easier and lazier way, with the lesser necessity for effort, and with the lesser need for the use of brains, and therefore the more aristocratic view. That for, say 1800 years, stars have scarcely moved, because, though changes in them have often been seen, they are too far away for changes in them to be observed. Or that the stars have scarcely moved, because they are points in a shell-like formation that holds them in place. However, the orthodox visualization of stars rushing at terrific velocities, in various directions, and never getting anywhere, is so in accordance with the unachievements of all other phenomenal things that I'd feel my heresies falter were it not for other data. But what of other data or of other circumstances? In this day of everybody's suspicion against circumstantial evidence, just what is not generally realized is that orthodox astronomy is founded upon nothing but circumstantial evidence. Also, all our data and repetitions and agreements of data are nothing but circumstantial evidence. Simply mention circumstantial evidence relatively, say to a murder trial, and most of us look doubtful. Consequently, I have only expressions and acceptances.